Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we focus on real Canadian rugby. I'm Hugh Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett. Derek, the MLR season is coming to a close. We've had some incredible games so far this season, but we've had a few great games this past round. Mainly those located in the United States. The one in Canada didn't seem to go too well. By the end, it started well and then didn't it? But I mean, we've had some fantastic games happening this weekend. With for the ones that did take place in the United States, any that caught your eye?
Oh, we're starting with the American games.
I'm just trying to put off the pain as much as I can.
Wow, man. Wow. Okay. That's the stage we're at of the season. Yeah. I mean, obviously the big one, Chicago beating Utah. You know, Dominguez absolutely balling out with the hat trick and that insane kick to save. I don't know. What are we calling that? That little kick save to stop the 50-22. That was just absolutely filthy. But yeah, Chicago, doing the one thing that I feel like every team that kind of finds themselves mathematically eliminated from the playoffs dreams of, and that is dragging somebody else with them. And that's tough for Utah. It's it's a shame you're not in the Eastern Conference, where barely being 500 is playoff worthy. But that's a tough one. I think that's the one that stands out the most. And then what I said, I think New England really needed to do get a dub on one of the top teams in the Western Conference to kind of, you know, they have to play Houston again this week, but beating Seattle in Seattle at home, and probably not even the strongest New England lineup, to be fair, either. They still got it done in Seattle on the road. I think that kind of bodes well for a little bit of, confidence, considering, you know, they haven't, like, their only blemishes this year are against Western Conference teams, and they have to end the season against two playoff teams in the West. But, you know, after absolutely destroying the Eastern Conference this year, then, you know, I think New England needed to show that they could, you know, beat or play with and beat some of the top teams in the West, and they got that done too. So, that was great to see. Also, I mean, it's great to see the vintage kits out in full force. Across the board, Houston looked great. Chicago didn't wear it this week, but it was like everybody looked. Utah wore the rodeo jersey, not the vintage jersey. You want to know why you lost, Utah? There it is, right there. The vintage jerseys are phenomenal. Every team that's been wearing them, every team that's been wearing them, it looks great. The ML, like, it's almost, I almost was at the point, like, this week and the past 2 weeks or whatever, watching some of these games. It's like, I'm almost like the MLR should make it, like, almost a part of, like, the league marketing thing, where they should just be like, look, this is what we're doing. Like, league wide, everyone's rocking vintage looking kit. As like nobody, no other league in the world does this. We could be like, that could be the MLR's thing. It's like, we could be the best dressed rugby league in the world. And like, just be like, and just have people be like, yeah. Cause, especially for us too, the Arrows kit that they wore, like, actually seeing it in person, like the blue square, the number font, I'm like, that, we talked about it at the start of the season. Like, the Arrows don't usually miss on jerseys. This is easily the best jersey the Arrows have ever worn. Like, easily. And it's, the vintage jerseys are, as we said on the show too, are also easily the best jerseys a lot of teams have worn. I don't know. I think we should bring it back. It was like, every time San Diego scored, you could, like, look down and be like, oh, that sucks, but damn, those kits are beautiful. So it makes you feel a little bit better. Soften the blow a little bit.
Yeah. Right. That's spit you on the game of.
Are we talking more about
so many blows?
Are we talking more about the American MLR games, or is this like the only moment we're doing this on the show?
Well, to be honest, I think you segued into talking about the Arrows. So we should kind of continue on that front. Let's talk about the game itself. All right.
the order on me. I don't know what's going on anymore. This is not the order of the your improv is hard to deal with.
You got to keep up, man. You got to say yes and.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, right. Let's follow on with talking about the game that happened. So, you know, San Diego coming in, the best win record in the league to that point.
The best record in the history of the league. Well, I guess now it's the best record. I shouldn't have cut you off. You said the correct thing. And then I cut you off to correct you. And I'm like, no, that. They now have the best record in the history of the league, but that's a spoiler for the game. Why are you listening to this if you don't know what happened in the game? But either way, continue.
You can edit this bit out if it helps.
I could edit it out, but then that's what's
the point? You should edit it out. You know, best to be thought of a fool than open your mouth and remove all that.
Oh, we should not have a podcast if that's your that's the antithesis of a podcast.
All right. Anyway, let's stop delaying. Let's talk about the game because. You know, San Diego, the best win ratio in the league at that point. The Arrows on their worst season to date. And, you know, we've seen, especially over the past few games when the Arrows have been hosting, it's normally within like the first 3 minutes the Arrows concede a try, and then it just continues from there. But this was different because San Diego, for however great they played, had an awful start to this game.
Hey, though, I'll let you continue, but I have questions about how bad San Diego actually played in the start of this game.
It was especially in like the first 10 minutes, they had opportunities in the Arrows' half. They had a line out, which they then conceded a penalty from. And when the Arrows kicked down field and took another line out, San Diego was a bit too eager catching an Arrows play, which then resulted in another penalty, which resulted in the Arrows getting a line out in San Diego's half. So you've gone from basically in the perfect try scoring position for San Diego to basically blowing in, just having to wait longer to get that first try. Now, admittedly, they did, you know, have a lot of possession, and they did get the first score of the game with Klein's try, but it did take them 17 minutes. And when you're talking about a team like San Diego against a team like the Arrows this year, taking 17 minutes to get that score is, you know, pretty subpar, to say the least. And then the Arrows come back into this game with a try from Lucas Rumble and the conversion to even everything from Shane O'Leary. Then you have O'Leary taking a penalty in what you think may be the last play of the game. And then, just when the clock's red, and there's a calamity on the pitch of which the ball's gone back from San Diego, and then, you know, players are trying to get it, and then suddenly it's
Mitch Richardson.
Yeah, Mitch Richardson getting it out, and then it's like, oh, is the pass good, but then Peter Nelson doesn't actually touch it. He just kicks it. And Will Grant is, you know, onside at the time, and he runs over to get the try, which is his first try in Major League Rugby and for the Arrows. And suddenly, the team that has only got one win this season is ahead of the most winningest team in the league at this point. The halftime score is 17 Arrows and 7 to San Diego. And I don't know what exactly happened in the sheds at halftime, but I think San Diego looked around to themselves and like, all right, guys, 40-minute warm-up is done. Let's finish and have a 40-minute game. And, you know, we can get that extra point. We can secure that home championship playoff. I know that a few of you guys had a bit of a jet lag, but you know, I think that's worn off now that we've had that good 40 minutes to get ourselves warmed up and ready to go. Because immediately in the second half, it was all San Diego. Nate Osberger getting a try within the first minute. Then we have Oake getting hit first of his two tries. Afungia getting his 4 minutes later. Judd 10 minutes after that, Lutz 5 minutes after that. And then just when you think like, okay, San Diego, you've run away with this. You're proving you're the best. You can let off the gas now.
They were like, nope, we're not going to do that. Oarke is over for his second. Burton finishes it off. And yeah, so the Arrows conceded 43 points in the second half, 7 tries. I think there's only 4 conversions off those. So it could have been much higher. And then, you know, and to be honest, there was a bit of ill discipline with like both teams. So Isaac Salmon getting a yellow card in the 68th minute, which obviously didn't help when Lutz, Oarke and Burton scored whilst he was off the pitch. And then Sylvia got a yellow card in the 80th minute, which did a fat locket of good to anyone, really. You know, and I'll admit the Arrows like kept the ball in. They kept playing as much as they could. San Diego as well were, for the most part, unwilling to concede at the end until finally the ball got over to Mikey Teo. And he's like, you know what? I've had enough of this. Turns around, kicks the ball into touch. Final score, Toronto 17, San Diego 50.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's it wasn't pleasant to read. It wasn't pleasant to be at. And yeah, we did have a full Canadian 15 starting for the first time in MLR history.
That was cool. Not cool.
And that lasted a grand total of 60 seconds before Tyler Rowland got injured.
That was not as cool. Yeah.
That was not as cool. I'm hoping Rowland recovers as swiftly as possible. And we have seen back playing as soon as possible. Maybe not this coming weekend, but, you know.
Yeah. Just, if you got an injury, you might as well. At this point in the season and where the Arrows are in the standings, if you got an injury, we might as well just. We don't need to rush guys back for one game. But yeah, so for this game, I think before we get into it, all Canadian starting 15, all Canadian eligible starting 15 at the very least. That was cool. I kind of liked it. It's something that makes the game special. I know that I think there's some people out there thinking it's like kind of a publicity thing, and yeah, it is. That's part of sports, is you do things for publicity and marketing and try to get people to show up and come to games. Because, you know, if like that's one of the things that's like that make that's the talking point of the game, that you can come away with this and be like, yeah, it was the first time an all Canadian starting 15 was, you know, ever played in MLR. Second time that an all domestic starting 15 has ever played. It is kind of cool. And I mean, like, to be honest, like most of those guys, based on who's available, based on the injury list, the vast majority of the guys that were in that starting 15 deserve to be in the starting 15. Right. And like, it's just the way it's kind of shaped up. I think so. I thought it was really cool. And yeah, it's unfortunate that Roland went down and it really only lasted for like, 90 seconds. As you said, hopefully he's okay. The Arrows had a couple tough injuries early in the game because Wong left around the half hour mark too.
Right? Yeah.
So you're kind of down to 2 front row players early in the first half is always a tough thing for a team to deal with. But yeah, as mentioned, I thought that was really cool. It made the game special. Even at the end of the game, it's like, if honestly, like if not for that all Canadian starting lineup, it's just another game where the Arrows lose by 30 this year. And, but because of that, it's actually, you know, I thought it was kind of cool. And it's kind of special because of the all Canadian starting lineup, even if it didn't really last all that long. But it's cool to see some guys like, I mean, it's one thing that we've kind of talked about wanting to see, right? Like toward the end of the year, it's cool to see like guys like Dawson Fatoric and Liam Bowman, like getting game time and stuff as like, right. You know, getting some of those, Owen Rattan, who I think has been actually kind of brilliant over the past like 3 games. Been really good. It's cool to see these guys, like some of these younger guys getting game time and, you know, getting Tyler Wong, even though he got hurt, that's cool. Like, he got some game time. You know, he gets a start and some game time. It's cool to see some of these younger players, you know, getting, you know, a chance to play in MLR, right? Getting them to, you know, like, hopefully it can kind of build. And, yeah, it's a cool little marketing thing to say it's an all-Canadian starting 15. But, yeah, it did actually – I think – to me, I think it actually did make the game a little special. On to the game itself. Yeah, San Diego just dominated this game, man. But I think that's to be expected. Obviously, it's, you know, the first-place team in MLR going up against the last-place team in MLR. A 50-17 scoreline probably isn't – too shocking for anybody. The way that it happened is probably a little bit more surprising. But I mean, I think everyone's saying, like, I keep seeing people saying that, like, San Diego played really bad in the first half, and I'm just like, I don't really think they played that bad. I don't think they played bad at all. They didn't score, maybe. They didn't maybe have the deadly finishing touch that they usually have. But it's like the Arrows, Stu, you talked about some of the possessions that the Arrows had in that game. You named three times, right? When they got a penalty, San Diego gave up a couple penalties. They kicked the ball into San Diego territory, and then they lost that line out, right? Mm-hmm. San Diego got the ball back, and you talked about the two tries. Those are the only three times the ball was in San Diego's end the entire half. The Arrows, to their credit, did the one thing we've been wishing they would do all year, where it's like, if they got an opportunity, they finished it.
Yes.
Right. It's literally like something that we've been complaining about all year. And they were like, as weird as it is to say, they were almost clinical in attack. They just never got the chance to attack.
Yeah.
In this game ever, because San Diego had the ball the entire time. Right.
Yeah.
Even in that first half, it's like the Arrows had 2 to 3 opportunities to score, and they took advantage of every single one of them.
Yeah.
But the entire rest of that half is just San Diego banging away at the line. And, you know, it's, you kind of look at it and you just have a guy like Dawson Fatorik, who's a winger, led the team in tackles, right? Mm-hmm. Every time San Diego went wide, he made that hit. He completed that hit. He made that tackle. Right. He drove Aoki out of bounds a couple of times. He was hitting guys into touch. Bowen was doing the same thing on the other side of the wing. He got Augsburger into touch a couple of times. Mason Flesch was making a lot of tackles. Owen Rattan had an unreal tackle and breakdown steal on the try line. Right. Like, yeah. The Arrows were playing like San Diego. Maybe they deserve to be frustrated with that lack of execution. Maybe there's a little lack of execution that they are, maybe you can argue that they had, but it was like the pressure was on that entire game. And it was maybe the best the Arrows defense has looked all year.
Yeah. But that's what I mean.
Any argument on that sentence is the best the Arrows defense looked all year was the first 30 minutes of this game.
No, but this is the thing. If you, from a San Diego perspective,
yeah,
is if you concede the ball three times in a half, and every time that happens, your opposition scores.
Problem, yeah.
Then that's a problem. And if you then, like, so I'll just run down and say, let's say you have possession for like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And you have only one score to show for that. Yeah. And you're also the team that is, to my knowledge, you know, has the scored the most tries of any team in MLR this season, and you're going up against the team that has conceded the most tries this season.
You're right.
Even prior to the game,
correct.
Then I would say that your fans would expect you to score more than one try in that 40-minute period.
I'm sure.
The second 40-minute period, you make exactly up for that mistake.
That was what I was.
That's the thing. I'm only talking about the first half.
No, but so, that's the whole point, though, is then what happened. San Diego, like you said, that what was said in the halftime speech? I have no idea what was said at the halftime speech. My guess is nothing. Like, in all honesty, it's like, you probably just be like, like, yeah, you are actually playing good. You're controlling the entire pace of the game. They took advantage of their three things. It's like, like the Battle of Troy, like the Trojan horse story and everything. It's like you have the Greeks constantly attacking, but the wall is impenetrable, right? The Greeks can't get inside it for whatever reason. But the Greeks are winning that war the whole time. They're putting down all the pressure. Maybe the Trojans get a couple hits back on them. But the second that they got inside the wall, that was over in a day. Right. It's like as soon as the floodgates open, it's done. And the second half, the floodgates open.
Like, yeah, but I'm not talking about the second half. I'm talking about the first half.
That's what I'm saying, though.
But that's all the criticism is that in the first half, San Diego performed far lower than what was expected of them.
They did the same thing in the first half. It's the Arrows defense couldn't hold. We just said it's like the Arrows defense needed to play the best they have all year, and they did, to hold San Diego to 7 points in that first half. The second half, the Arrows defense couldn't do it, and the floodgates opened.
I don't know. I still think that there were unforced errors from San Diego.
Sure,
in that first half, far more.
And sure, there's, but it's like, if you're gonna sit there and the entire game is played inside the Arrows 22, like, you would take that. Right. And it's like San Diego looked calm the whole game. Even the two tries that they gave up, they're good tries and stuff. I just don't think, like, it's tough to, like, look at a game where we can literally recall the number of times that the ball was in San Diego's end this whole game and San Diego wins by 33 and sit here and be like, San Diego played bad for any stretch of this game. Maybe it could have been more, maybe, but to say San Diego played bad, I think is a bit of a stretch on this. If anything, it shows you that, like, they can play, like, they can execute at 50% and still kill you by 30. Cause that's how good San Diego is. San Diego needs to add the words of doom to the end of their team name. Cause that's really what they are. It's the Legion of Doom. They don't need, like, if their attack's rolling, you can't stop it or whatever. And the Arrows somehow found a way to do something that no other team has done all year, which is find a way to actually slow it down for 30 minutes. And then the floodgates open in the second half. I don't even think, did New England even score 7 tries in one half when they won 85-5 or whatever that was?
80-5?
Yeah, did they even score 7 tries and a half? 7 tries and a half is absurd.
Didn't they score 15 tries in that game? So
they
probably did.
I mean,
mathematically, they had to.
Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to think. Like, it's a lot.
I'm trying not to
think about that game too much.
Right, well, whilst you're confirming which half they scored however many tries in, I want to talk about some of the players that... you know, really show as you've mentioned, Owen Rattan, Mason Flesch, Dawson Fatorik, and Liam Bowman both putting in a full 80 stint.
New England had 8 tries in the first half and then 4 in the second half.
There we go. Okay.
Never mind. There you go.
Anyway, so, but one player that I don't think has been mentioned, and like, he had a great shift, and it's just because he was doing something other than what he's known for, is DeShaun Bowen. He was, like, his defensive efforts have come along greatly.
Yeah, he was good. His defense, yeah. Him and Fatorik were great in that first 30 minutes. Like,
yeah.
San Diego loves attacking the wings, and they shut it down for the...
Yeah.
Most part, right?
Bowen even put in, like, an amazing tackle that knocked the San Diego player into touch. And then that was the end of his stint, unfortunately, to be replaced by Tassi. But
you know what the funny thing is, like, I agree with you that I think Bowen played really well defensively. I also think Batoric played really well defensively. And we're like, oh, they did a good job shutting down the San Diego attack on the wings. Augsburger had a try and Aoki had 2 tries. And we're still like, yeah, they did a pretty good job stopping that.
Yeah, but okay. Augsburger had a try in the 41st minute. Aoki's 2 tries occurred after Bowen came off.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. Oh, after Bowen or after Bowen came. Yeah, but Fatorik was still on, so Fatorik would have had Aoki. Yeah.
But I don't know. As well, it depends how well. If we look back on the playing strategies, well, we would be here all week. But yeah, you know, and you know, Lucas Rumble getting his, I believe it's his fifth
career.
He's currently averaging one a season, so good for him. Also, he has crossed the 4,000 minutes played for the Arrows. He's the first Arrow to do that, and the franchise's leader in minutes played. To put that in comparison, Mike Shepherd, who is the most capped Arrows player, is only just past the 3,500 minutes mark.
Yeah.
So Shepherd, I'm not entirely sure how that works, but
Shepherd comes off the bench a lot more than Rumble.
Well, yeah, at this stage of his career, he does. And while speaking of minutes, it's also noted that Mason Flesch has now played 1,500 minutes and is the 15th Arrow to reach that career milestone. And as well, Mitch Richardson, you know, we're saying he was putting in a lot of tackles. He has now clocked up 200 in his career, and he's the 13th Arrow to reach that point.
I thought Richardson was, you know, I thought Richardson was great in this game. Mitch Richardson might be the most underrated player in Major League Rugby.
Yeah.
He
I get that.
Yeah, right. When I say it's like underrated, it's like I don't think anybody other than Arrows fans talks about Mitch Richardson ever. It's a shame because he's actually really good. And I do kind of hope that you know, maybe some folks at Rugby Canada start talking about Mitch Richardson a little bit. But like he's an uncapped player on the last place team in the league. So I know that that's not exactly going to raise your profile too much. Mm-hmm. But it's like every game he's in the centers, he's constantly making tackles. He's really effective at making tackles as well. And he's, you know, been somebody that can drive the Arrows attack, right? So it's like, yeah, he's making a lot of tackles. He also led the team in carry meters in this game, right? And, you know, and obviously one of his big contributions was he had the line break where he made Marcel Brocky just look silly on like that little step back inside. And Marcel Brocky, obviously USA Eagle, like cap players, probably one of the better players in the league, right? Certainly this year, he's definitely one of the better players in the league, right? And yeah, like Richardson kind of made him look silly on that play, and he set up you know, what would end up being Will Grant's try, right? And I think like I just think like, you know, there's some kind of bright spots. I think like as bad as the Arrows season has been, and I mean we probably shouldn't really sugarcoat it, like there's no really denying that this season has been like really bad, even though we do try to like pull out positives and stuff from each game, it has gotten a little bit more difficult as the season has gone on. But like as bad as it is, I think there's some bright spots, and it's like there are some guys that do seem like they are coming up, like Fatorik, Richardson, you mentioned Bowen, Mason Flesch, I think has been really good this year. He was also among the team leaders in tackles and carries in this game. Like also had a couple line out takes and stuff too. Like, I don't know what more we want Mason Flesch to do right now.
Yeah.
I think he's been playing really well. Rattan is easily the best Arrows draft pick that they've ever made. And to also just to clarify that, as make sure we all remember that James O'Neill was drafted by LA, so he doesn't count as an Arrows draft pick, but O'Neill's also been really good for the Arrows. Right. And it's like that back row's been good. Like there is some like young players that I think if we're going to be looking, there's something. Yeah. And I mean, like Richardson been in the league for 5 years, but he's still pretty young, but like, you know, there's some players that seem like they can still be like part of a core. It's the Arrows kind of look to continue building and have some success going into, the next season. I think in this game though, like they really just ran into, you know, this is obviously the first chance that we get this year. This is the first chance we've gotten in a long time to see San Diego live, right?
Yeah.
And to see them, and like, you know, there's some things that it's like, you know, you can watch on TV, I think, sometimes and be like, yeah, this team is obviously great. But then there's some times where it's like you watch them live and it's like, man, San Diego is so good. Like, yeah. They're like, even like watching like their attack, Judd is incredible at scrum half. Like, I don't think, like, even in the first half when you know, maybe when San Diego wasn't necessarily putting up the points, right, and the Arrows defense was the best they have been all year and were shutting down the Legion attack, as short as, unfortunately, not full 80 minutes lived as that was, but it was like, like, Judd's just so fast at getting the ball out, and when he gets the ball out, he's getting it out quick, he's getting it out accurately. The Arrows defense, like, a lot of the tackles that they made, even in the first half, were guys just, like, making huge, like, huge tackles, right? Like, actually coming up, like, really big on the defensive side of the ball, because it's like, man, like, they were spread so wide, and, like, the speed that they were attacking, it's like, you never get a chance to, like, reset your defense properly, right? So, and in the second half, it really showed, because it became harder to kind of keep up with that attack, but it's, like, Judd Hooley Lutz as a combo there, the ball can move through, just constantly, like, opening up everything. And then obviously you got guys like Augsburger and Aoki, like, on the wings that are just deadly with deadly finishers, right? And it's like their attack is like so flawlessly perfect in the way they can move around defense and use the speed to, like, absolutely burn you. But then you have guys that have the ability to, like, you know, run really big, strong crash balls to, you know, draw in the defense. You have guys everywhere that have the skill to, like, you know, keep up, you know, have the skill to set up plays to maybe score tries that, you know, less talented teams wouldn't be able to actually pull off. And it's just their attack's incredible. And they didn't even have Ma Nanu this week. And it was still like that. This is insane, like, to watch. Like, in the second half when it got going, it's like, you know, watching, it's, you know, you're watching a machine run perfectly. Like, it's just flawless execution from San Diego, especially in the second half. Or I guess mostly in the second half, because you pointed out that they didn't score that much in the first half. But I think that's, the Arrows were good.
So, speaking of the second half, that is when San Diego's Canadian contingent came onto the field, with Sears Duru coming on at halftime and Michael Smith coming on at the 65th minute. And that was the half in which they scored the most tries. So I don't know what to tell you, San Diego. That's the trick you missed. You got to start the Canadians. And also, I want to point out, you know, huge respect and thanks to Kat Roche being the woman in the middle, you know.
Yeah, she was great.
Another fantastic game from her. Yeah. Always good to see. But yeah, and so so with that victory, San Diego get the necessary points to secure them hosting the Western Conference Final, which I believe takes place on July the 1st.
And
so
they
Canada Day.
Yeah, and they also end up setting the record for the most wins in a season too. Which was cool. You did mention Mike Smith before. That was kind of fun. After the game, we got a chance to you know, catch up with him. You know, it's kind of cool. Like, we've had obviously a couple players from other teams around the league that have come on the podcast, but obviously our proximity to the Arrows kind of means we get to meet the Arrows players a whole lot more. So it's kind of cool when we get the chance to meet somebody that we've had on the podcast that plays for another club, especially considering San Diego hasn't been in Toronto at all for a while. So it's first chance to actually meet Michael Smith in person. And, you know, it was a fun chat. He just sounds like he's having the absolute most fun playing for San Diego right now. You know, nothing but great things to say about the setup they have there. And obviously, you know, the fact that they're 14-1 really helps. You know, so best of luck to him. And it's kind of like, you know, it'd be cool to see you know, obviously, you know, him coming off medical school and stuff, it's a fun story. We talk about it post-match interviews up on LaRoucheRugby.ca and YouTube and all that. But yeah, like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, because, you know, guys like him are like, ah, if the Arrows aren't going to win the Shield, it's like, yeah, it would be cool to see San Diego do it. So best of luck to him the rest of the year. Got to get some LaRouche Rugby podcast guests with Shields. So only had there's only a few that we can say have had that. Yes. Yeah. Corey Thomas, DTH Vandermeer, Jeff Hassler. I think that might be it. So we need to add to the Shield winning caliber on the of guests.
Hang on. You're missing you're missing someone that we've interviewed within the past, what is it now? I'd say 6 months, 7 months.
Oh, Pete Smith. Peter Smith, yeah, Peter Smith. Yeah, good call, Stu, good call.
Yeah, unbelievable. Memory like a goldfish, this one.
Two Seawolves, two Giltinis. Yeah, memory like a goldfish. Yeah, that's very, very true.
All right, anyway.
Find out who else I'm forgetting. I'm sure everybody listening will let us know.
The players themselves
will let us know, because that's even more embarrassing, I think.
Okay, let's move on to the other MLR results. We've already talked about a few, but let's go through them in chronological order. First up, we had Houston versus DC. Both teams have made their respective playoffs, but obviously, pride and, you know, rankings are on the line. And you know, this was entirely Houston's game. It was at Sabercats Stadium. And from the get-go, they shut down any form of attack that DC had. This may actually come back to bite DC. We'll have to see how the games go this week. But the final score, Houston 31, DC 7. So I was getting a bit ahead of myself, because the next game we have is Dallas versus NOLA. And you know, if we have had a few exciting games this round, this one was one for the purists, let's put it like that. Very little action taking place, very few scoring opportunities. NOLA, you know, they did the business in the first half, but ultimately this was a game that went, you know, they did enough. Dallas, you know, had a bit more of a punch in them, but it just was a bit too little too late. The final score, Dallas 10, NOLA 15.
I hope somebody checked on that ball boy that got absolutely destroyed on the sidelines. So
yeah,
hopefully he's okay.
I guess we'll find out next week if he's there or not. So
he looked like he kind of popped up really quick, but that was a... arguably the most effective tackle Dallas made all game.
All right, we move on to an all-Eastern affair with Atlanta versus New York. Atlanta very much in the backseat for this game. New York, they knew that just getting a bonus point would secure them a playoff spot. And whilst they did get that with their fourth try, they were like, you know what? That's not enough. Let's go a little bit further. And they were able to secure a dominant win, eliminating Atlanta. The final score, Atlanta 24, New York 39. Then we move on to the All-Western affair, and we had the second team eliminated from playoff contention. We've already talked about it, Utah versus Chicago. Julian Dominguez playing the game of his life to score three tries and get it level when the clock was in the red, the conversion being all the difference. And the end, the final score, Utah 24, Chicago 26. And finally, we conclude the round with Seattle versus New England. As we mentioned before, New England, you know, they've scored losses this season, and that has been against San Diego and the Utah Warriors. Would it be Seattle, especially at home, being able to claw back a win and ensure Western dominance? Well, that wasn't the case in the end. The final score, Seattle 26, New England 34. So we go from MLR results to Canada under 20s results. And, you know, and it seems to be a trend here with like Arrows under 20s. Don't get your hopes up, because they're inevitably dashed. Whilst these games were streamed on Flow Rugby, so they weren't really, they're not available in Canada through a direct broadcaster. We do have the final results, and, you know, because this was done on aggregate score. They'd lost the previous game. They needed to not only win, but win by a considerable amount. Neither of those things happened, because the final score, USA 39, Canada 14, with Canada getting two try scores, Noah Flesch and Craig Mitchell Herman, with Owen McCormack scoring two conversions. But yeah, this was another game that was entirely dominated by the U20 Americans. And the final aggregate score, which the USA clearly won, 82-34. That means the USA progresses to the World Under-20s Trophy Tournament in Kenya later this year. So disappointing. And,
it's,
you know, didn't get it. We didn't get to see it. We can only get bits, but
it's on YouTube. You can watch it if you want. You know, obviously it is a disappointing result, but I think it's, you know, if you're really thinking about it, it shows where we're at right now, right? And obviously there's a lot of development that still needs to happen. It's cool to see, you know, a lot of these guys that are on the U20 teams right now are going to get more opportunity than any Canadian rugby players have probably ever had before them to continue developing. But you know, the total aggregate score of 82-34 is probably disappointing, but I think to me it's like it just shows that there's still like work. There's obviously work to be done, right? With the development of Rugby Canada. And you know, it's like we know that there's gonna be, it seems like with the new hiring of Stephen Aboud, and what his resume brings, it looks like there's going to be a big focus on the development system. So it's kind of just shows right now where we're at. But, you know, these players that are playing U20s right now, it's like they have, you know, the Arrows Academy. They got Pacific Pride. They probably got, you know, they got, you know, a university game that's probably in a better spot than it's probably been in a very long time, if not ever. Right. Like there's going to be a lot of those types of opportunities. It is, I think, a little bit too of like the reminder that this is going to take a long time. Like the whole like Rugby Canada rebuild it'll take a while. Right. And it's, Canada beat Tonga at the, 2011 World Cup, which brought Canada up to 11th in the world rankings, right? And then it's taken like 10, 11, 12 years, I guess, to go from being on the verge of the top 10 in the world to where Rugby Canada is at now. And it's probably going to take a really long time to actually build all that back up. Right. And, you know, the U20 team is going to be the players on that U20 team. The players on the U18 team are going to be key cogs in that. Right. So it's like, I just think it's like, you can't get discouraged by the loss. You have to recognize, you know, maybe what went wrong and what needs to be done better, but I hope they don't really get discouraged by the loss. Cause they're, you know, they're obviously really important players, for Rugby Canada going forward. And, you know, the other thing too, that it's like was really cool to see this weekend, which is really what I think, if we're talking about Canada having to develop players going forward in the future, is, you know, being at Arrows games now, it's really cool to see like how many kids and stuff are at Arrows games, how many kids are, you know, when the game is over, are running onto the field and start kicking Arrows balls around, or just kicking rugby balls in general. They don't have to necessarily be branded, but they're like, you know, kicking balls around, passing balls. There's like, you know, kids are like chasing down players to, yeah, you know, like get autographs or get pictures and stuff. And that stuff's really cool because that's probably the most important demographic right now for the development of Rugby Canada to build back up, right? And it's, you know, it is one of those things where it's like, hey, like, who's gonna, okay, so we got the North American Rugby World Cup, the USA Rugby World Cup's in what, 2031? right?
Yes.
Okay, so like, who's going to be the best player for Rugby Canada at that World Cup? Who do you think it'll be?
Probably Noah Flesch, someone like that. Someone who's in like the U20s and U18s and stuff like that. Yeah.
I hope so. That would be cool. I was going to say I have no idea because that kid's probably 12, right? Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's probably, it might be the kid that chased down Mike Shepherd, that ran, that I saw run around the gate to chase down Mike Shepherd as he was trying to go back to the locker room after already spending 20 minutes signing autographs and stuff, right? It's like, yeah, it might be that kid. You hope that it's that kid. I don't know. He looked about 10. He'll be able to play at the World Cup. Looked about 10 to 12, I guess. I don't know. He'll be able to play at the World Cup, right? And it's like I think you have all of the, like, those types of players. It's like, we got to start getting kids and stuff into rugby, like, really early. And I think right now it's like, you know, like you said, a guy like Noah Flesch will probably get an opportunity to turn pro. You know, obviously his brother's already pro, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Mason Flesch is already getting opportunities that, you know, guys that are, you know, 5 to 10 years older than him maybe never got, right? Just because of the existence of MLR, the existence of Pacific Pride and all the other development things that we're implementing. And so it's like, it's a disappointing loss, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But I don't know. I don't feel discouraged by it, because it's like, I think you have to recognize that this is going to take a long time to build back up. And I mean, I know it's like the ultimate sports cliche, but maybe you got to trust the process a little bit. And it's like, the, you know, if Rugby Canada is going to rise back up, it's going to be the U20 team, the U18 team. And, you know, realistically, kids that are probably age 10 to 15 right now that get to watch the Toronto Arrows, get to watch pro rugby in Canada for the first time. Like, we're probably, like, even young players on the Arrows didn't grow up with pro rugby.
Yeah.
Like, we're probably we're probably still 10 years away from getting like the first like generation of MLR players that'll be like, oh yeah, I've been watching the Toronto Arrows since I was 5. Right? Like, I'm a lifelong rugby fan because I've got to watch the Arrows or the Free Jacks or the Legion or whoever since I was 5. Right? Like, we're like 10 years away from those kids still. Right?
Yeah. So
it's gonna be a long road, but I don't know. It's disappointing. I would prefer that Canada wins, but I mean, like, yeah. I don't know. I'm finding it hard to be discouraged by this at this point, because I feel like it's such a long road.
Yeah, so I guess you're right. And
kick ass at the Coast to Coast Cup, guys. No matter what team you're playing for at that Coast to Coast Cup.
Yeah, well, I imagine a Canadian's going to do well.
Go kick ass wherever you play. I don't care. Go destroy the U20 snap or the U Sports circuit next year. I don't care.
All right.
Good luck.
Okay, so whilst we're obviously all aware that Canada will not be playing in the Men's Rugby World Cup in France this year,
I don't believe we've mentioned this on the podcast before. Are we sure about that
information? Unfortunately, we are. But according to an article for rnz.co.nz, which is a New Zealand outlet, talking about the players from Pacifico Moana set for the Tongan World Cup call-up. And there's a very interesting section. I'm going to quote it with added information. So it says, following the Pacific Nations Cup series that will take place in July, the Akale Tahi, which is Tonga, will play 2 home tests against Canada in their only other warm-ups before flying to France. Now, this is something that hasn't been confirmed by Rugby Canada or the Tongan Rugby Union, but this is the only indication to date that there are going to be tests for the men's senior 15s team this year.
I feel like every other week we get an article that says there'll be no games, then an article says there'll be a couple games, then an article that says those previous games were canceled, and then an article that says they're playing 2 games.
Yeah, so until a union, ideally Rugby Canada, comes out soon and says that this is official. There are going to be two tests played and maybe, you know, a test against an Australian club side or something. I don't know. I think as much as I want to say like, oh yeah, this will be amazing to see, this could also be like outdated information that they are regurgitating. So, you know, until a union confirms that the men's 15s will be playing some games this summer, because we've heard about the test series that will be taking place with Spain, the USA, and another rugby nation that I am drawing a blank on at the moment.
Yeah, that's like November or something.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be after the World Cup in an international window, I suppose.
It's really nice of them to not make sure that tournament doesn't overshadow the World Cup.
Yeah, I think that's very nice of them as well.
It's very Canadian of us to make. We don't want to steal anybody's thunder, you know?
Okay. Moving on from rumored games to games that are definitely happening. The Coast to Coast Cup returns this weekend, and we will have the Atlantic Selects kicking off with a match against the BC Bears. That'll be taking place on June 17th. Then the Bears will face the Arrows Academy on the Wednesday, which is June 21st, before finally concluding the tournament with a match of the Selects versus the Academy on Saturday, June 24th. So, you know, you were saying it's nice that the Canada men's team will be playing games in November and not overlapping with the World Cup, whilst this tournament is directly overlapping with final round of MLR and the eliminator match. So, fortunately, these are all on Atlantic time, and even the match of the Selects versus Bears, which is on June 17th, which is the same day as the Arrows' final game of the season, it doesn't actually interfere because the kickoff time is going to be 5:15 Eastern time, 6:15 Atlantic. So hopefully it'll be all concluded in time for the 7 p.m. kickoff for the Arrows game. So, you know, Arrows maybe show that game on the big screen as people are coming into the stadium, giving them some Canadian rugby to watch. You know, we'll definitely be interested in watching it, but, you know, it's nice to spread the love and let everyone be able to see the rugby that's going on. But we will be talking about the Coast to Coast Cup in our next podcast, and we will be talking about it in the conclusion on the episode afterwards. But speaking of games that will coincide with the Coast to Coast Cup, we are into the final round of MLR 2023 before we get into the Championship Series, which means we have our final season predictions. And up first, we have Old Glory DC versus Rugby ATL. Derek, who do you have?
Let me think. I think I'll go with DC. They probably, you know, they lost last week. You probably want to build a little bit of momentum before the playoffs. So I feel like they'll come out a little bit stronger at home.
Yeah, I think for DC, it's basically if they can knock off ATL, and if Utah can do a favor for them, they can have their first postseason game held at Segra Field.
Yep.
So obviously getting that home advantage will mean a lot to them. Of course, it's out of their hands. They need the result from Utah to the Utah New York game to go their way. So it's hard to tell, but, you know, we'll see. Up next, we have Toronto versus NOLA Gold. And considering how topsy-turvy NOLA have been this season, I think this is a game that the Arrows have to win.
Yeah, you know what? It's actually kind of funny. This is like, I feel like obviously every week I pick the Arrows no matter what. And it's like sometimes that's clearly like using the heart to pick instead of the brain.
Yeah.
But this is one of those genuine times where I'm like, I feel like the Arrows are going to win this game. It's yeah, like, I don't know. Nola hasn't been very good. Even against Dallas last week, like, they weren't that good. Like, they won, but, like, I don't know. They're not that good. Yeah, I'll take Toronto. Let's end the season with a positive 23 Canadians this time. I don't think you can do that, actually. I don't think they have the personnel to actually make that happen. But it'd be funny. I don't know. 23 of them. That'd be good.
All right. Now we have an interesting matchup. Dallas versus Chicago. Two teams obviously eliminated from the West. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot riding on this. This is Dallas versus Chicago, was Chicago's first victory this season. Yep. Both teams on two victories in the 2023 season, looking to get their third. Who do you think is going to walk away with it?
I think I'm going to go Dallas just because they're at home. Dallas at home.
I think that's it. And just to be different, and because, you know, I'm already out of trying to catch up with you in terms of wins, losses, I'm going to go with Chicago. I think these are teams that are evenly matched.
In all honesty, it's probably going to be a really good game.
I'm looking forward to watching it as well. Now we get on to the business end. We have two teams that have made their respective championship series and conference series games. We have New England hosting Houston. And I'm going to go with New England. You know, they've shown that they can beat teams in the West that are of championship series caliber. Houston, you know, they've done their job. Then there's nothing they can do to finish higher than third. So I think this could be a time where Houston are like, okay, we're going to rest some of our players and get ready for the match against Seattle next week. New England obviously will want a perfect record at home this season, so they're looking to clip off any opposition. So I'm going with New England.
Yeah, yeah, see, this is kind of an interesting game. As you kind of said, it's like the result's not going to impact anything standings wise for either team. It'd be interesting. I think, like, both teams probably got a couple injuries that maybe affect. This is one of those games where it's like, you know, we're obviously we record when we record, and it's, we don't see lineups. I'd be very curious to see what the lineups are, if they're, you know, either team opts to rest guys. I don't know. Just again, maybe just for the sake of being different or whatever. I think New England is obviously, you know, next to impossible to beat at home, but just for you know, why not? I'll take Houston.
All right. Okay.
Who knows what these lineups look like?
Absolutely. Well, another game we have is New York versus Utah. And
need something from this game too, because they,
yeah,
see, as you mentioned, DC can catch them.
That is correct. New York are only, I believe, 3 points adrift.
Yeah.
No, I think I've got that wrong. Let me just confirm. And yeah, so New York are currently 4 points ahead. They do also have the higher win rate, so even getting a bonus point will secure that home game in the eliminator. So,
well, something to play for them.
Yeah, and if it is anything like this weekend is going to show them, they'll be like, yeah, we could get a bonus point, and we could just leave it at that. But I really want to win. So, yeah, I think, you know, ending a positive at home, I think I'm going to go with New York.
Yeah. You know what I kind of want to see is, I think Utah, coming off that loss, I think they'll want a little bit of a revenge game, just for, on two things, on the fact that if they beat New York, they'll have two more wins than New York, who are going to the playoffs when they're not. And also just to end the season on a high after, you know, a disappointing performance against Chicago last week. So I feel like they're going to want to, go out, and I think it would be funny. I think I'm picking Utah for the laughs. I just think it'd be funny.
All right. Fair enough. And in a game that could also be the Western Conference final in 2 weeks' time, we have San Diego versus Seattle. And, you know, both teams, obviously, in the playoff fight. San Diego, by the benefit of finishing top, also get that week bye. I think they're also going to want to be able to say, like, you know, Seattle, yes, they did beat us this season, but if it wasn't for that, we'd have a perfect season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in their mindset, it's like, we're going to win 16 games anyway because we're going to make it to the final. So I'm going to go with the home team. I'm going to go with San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, I think this game will be interesting. It'll again, another game that'll be interesting to see what the lineups are. As you said, nothing that happens in this game is going to impact the standings in any way. But, you know, you kind of, you might have to, I don't know, teams might want to balance, you know, not tipping your hand, maybe resting guys, and also maybe wanting to send a message to one of the teams that you could be playing in 2 weeks' time in the playoffs. But that being said, man, Legion of Doom, they're just, their attack is relentless. I don't know why you would pick against them, even if they're going up against a team as good as Seattle. They're there.
All right. So those game again, DC versus ATL, Toronto versus NOLA, Dallas versus Chicago, New England versus Houston, New York versus Utah, and San Diego versus Seattle to see out the MLR 2023 regular season. And you can watch all those games on the Rugby Network, except, of course, for the Arrows games, which will be available on TSN, TSN.ca, TSN Plus, and the TSN app. And we have also got the return of Premier Rugby Sevens this weekend with the Eastern Conference kickoff that will be taking place in Austin. And whilst the opening four games are going to be only available on the CBS Sports Network, the bronze and gold medal finals are all going to be available on YouTube. So head over to the PR7's YouTube channel and you can watch those games on June 17th. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more as well as our written pieces on our new website, therougerugby.ca. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel at The Rouge Rugby with episodes of the podcasts as well as extra interviews with player and coaches in our black box segments. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all of our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can the fine people find you on social media?
At Percept the Jet across all social media platforms.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spell H4RDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you for joining me, and thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.